when all his schemes had come to frustration as the captain just seemed to bumble around and do the one thing that would undo all his efforts. As the great general came abreast, his mount suddenly snorted and tossed its head, then shied slightly, as though it had stirred up a snake. Mugabe cursed, although he was never in any danger of losing his seat. Laughter dropped out of the sky, and a white crow fell right behind it. Alighting precariously atop the pole carried by the great general's personal standard-bearer. Cursing still, Mugabe failed to note that his steed turned its head to watch me as I passed. The darn thing winked. I had been recognized. The beast must be the very one I had ridden so long ago, for so many hundreds of miles. I began to get nervous. Someone amongst Mugabe's personal guard launched an arrow at the crow. It missed. It fell not far from Runmust, who shouted angrily before he thought. Now the great general vented his spleen upon the archer. The horse continued to watch me. I fought an urge to run. Maybe I could get through this yet. The white crow squawked something that might have been words, but were just racket to me. Mugabe's mount jumped enough to freshen the well of vituperation. It faced forward and began to trot. The ultimate effect was to divert attention from us southbound scrubs. Everybody but Iqbal's Suruvija stared at the ground and walked a little faster. Soon we were past the worst danger. I drifted over beside Swan, who was still so nervous he stuttered when he tried to crack a joke about pigeons coming to roost on the great general while he was still alive. Laughter passed overhead. The crow, up high, was almost indistinguishable against the gathering clouds. I wished I had someone along who could advise me about that thing. For a generation, crows have not been good omens for the company, but this one seemed to have done us a favor. Could it be Mergen from another time? Mergen would be watching, I was sure, but that crow had no way to communicate, so maybe so. If so, this encounter would have been an adventure for him, too. What with him knowing that if we got caught, his chances for resurrection plummeted to zero. Chapter 50 The passages of the great general held us up long enough that we could not leave the road unremarked until after the rains began falling hard enough to conceal our movements from everyone except someone extremely close by. We left the road unnoticed then. Our travel formation collapsed into a miserable pack. Only Narayan Singh showed real eagerness to get to the grove, and he did not hurry. Not often long on empathy, I found myself pitying Iqbal's children. Swan pointed out,
"It'd be to Singh's advantage to get us there just after nightfalls."
"Darkness always comes."
"Huh?"
"A deceiver aphorism. Darkness is their time, and darkness always comes."
"You don't seem particularly bothered."
He was hard to hear. The rainfall was that heavy. "I'm bothered, buddy. I've been here before. It isn't what you'd call a good place." I could not state that fact with sufficient emphasis. The Grove of Doom was the heart of darkness, a spawning ground for all hopelessness and despair. It gnawed at your soul. Unless you were a believer, apparently.